Welcome to the Hardball Times Audio, your weekly stop for baseball's biggest stories, past and present, with your hosts, Jen Macramos, Sarah Wexler, and Mary Craig. In our third postseason episode, we're discussing the results of the League Championship Series and looking ahead to the World Series. Joining us is Baseball Prospectus staff writer and Hardball Talk contributor, Ashley Varela. Ashley, how are you doing?
I'm doing pretty good. How are you?
Doing pretty all right. So let's start with the National League. Final result is that the Dodgers take the series in five games to advance to their first World Series since 1988. What were the main highlights of this series?
I can think of a few things. I mean, obviously you got to talk about Justin Turner's walk-off home run in game two. You know, obviously, it would be really exciting no matter what, but also it happened to be on the anniversary of the Kirk Gibson home run. So, you know, only two walk-off home runs in Dodger postseason history and both coming on that same date is kind of like, what are the odds of that? That's, you know, it's amazing. And you also got to talk about that game five and Kike Hernandez, like Kike freaking Hernandez hitting three home runs. Just of all people, you know, it's like with the postseason, you really never know who's going to step up and have a big game. And sure enough, you know, this guy who basically is in the lineup to hit lefties, and he does hit lefties. He hits two of those home runs off of a lefty, but he also hits a grand slam off of a righty. And it's like, yeah, that it was amazing. You know, I'm sorry. I'm really happy still.
And I think we kind of have to talk about how great the Dodgers pitching staff as a whole was, particularly the bullpen. They just completely shut down the Cubs offense, which was really just astounding that they were able to do that throughout the entire
season. The bullpen didn't give up an entire run for the entire five. Sorry, they didn't give up a single run for the entire five games. I knew they were good, but I didn't know, like, they could do that to, like, a lineup that good.
Yeah, and I think you have to throw a bone to Clayton Kershaw also in Game 5. You know, he stepped up, and we saw the first really great outing from him in this entire postseason and dating back to some of his other starts in the other postseasons. So I think that combined with how strong the bullpen is really puts the Dodgers in an advantageous position heading into the World Series.
Yeah, definitely. It was great to see Kershaw. You know, I argue that this was the biggest game of his career because while he's had other big games, it's been kind of different. Like, he's never had the chance to take his team to the World Series with a good start. He has had starts where, you know, if he doesn't do well, it will mean his team is eliminated. But I think, you know, the fact that a good performance here was crucial in helping his team, like, get over that hump. I think this was the biggest game of his career. And, you know, six innings, only one run allowed. It was a very, very good performance. And I imagine that just has to be so liberating for him in so many ways.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was really fantastic.
Yeah, the Dodgers were just completely dominant in the series, and if they weren't scoring runs, their pitching was holding it down, and you know, they were just a better team, and they completely deserved to go to the World Series after, you know, performances by Turner and Hernandez and Kershaw, and just their entire team was just, you know, when one guy wasn't hitting or throwing that well, there was another guy who was, you know, able to step up. So, you know, when they say that it's a team effort, you know, you could really see that with the Dodgers.
Yeah, and I say this with apologies to Ashley, but I think we also got to shout out Chris Taylor. It's just, he's been nothing short of a revelation, you know. Him emerging as, like, an actually good bat who can hit for some power in addition to being a good fielder, and not to mention, you know, his transition from being an infielder to actually a pretty good outfielder. He's just, like, become a prototypical leadoff man who, you know, can get on base a lot, can work a good at-bat, see a lot of pitches. can hit for some power too, as we saw in the series. You know, he came up with a couple home runs. And yeah, it's just I feel like the leadoff spot was a thing that was a weakness for the Dodgers for quite some time. And here comes Chris Taylor having, you know, a career year and becoming an essential part of that lineup. And, you know, end up being co-MVP of the series with Justin Turner. Like, you know, that's another one of those things where, like, who would have ever seen that coming?
Definitely. So while we talked about the highlights of the series, what players disappointed?
The entire Cubs team. I think, like, particularly the top of the order, they just got nothing from those guys the entire series. You had massive slumps from Bryant and from Rizzo, and that certainly contributed to a lot of the struggles. And just the entire lineup was unable to hit Dodgers pitching, which I think is a real testament to how great the Dodgers were, but also it speaks to just how out of sync the entire lineup was.
Yeah, not to mention that their bullpen completely imploded.
Yeah.
Entering game three, they had given up something like 23 walks, and the offense had gone like 0-26. So, I mean, yeah, nothing clicked for them this series.
Yeah, it's very true. I mean, you know, we mentioned Rizzo specifically as, you know, a hitter who didn't come through. He went like 1-17. But I think what's kind of funny is I'm just like looking at the numbers right now. And Jake Arrieta and Jose Quintana had as many, if not more, hits than a lot of the Cubs starting lineup. Like, they both got hits in you know, the games that they pitched. And it's like, yeah, Jose Quintana contributed offensively just as much as, you know, like, John Jay did. And that won't do.
Yeah, and Lester also got a hit, too. So when
yes.
Your pitchers are out hitting your position players, that's not a great sign.
Yeah, I can't believe I forgot to mention Lester. My apologies. I think it was such like a fever dream that he actually managed to both pick off a runner successfully this postseason and get a hit. That it's like, did that actually happen? But I guess it did.
Yeah, the Cubs were just incredibly disappointing in this. In this series, you know, you'd think from defending World Series champions coming off the momentum of that wild NLDS, they, you know, might be able to squeak out more than just one win, but their entire roster, save for when their starting pitchers were hitting, it just seemed like a disaster.
And this series, I think, says a lot about the idea of momentum, and you see a lot of people thinking that, you know, great wins can really build momentum for a team, and then people were wondering a little how a longer layoff would affect the Dodgers, but it was really just the best team totally dominated, and there was no amount of momentum that I think could have helped the Cubs.
With the NLCS coming to close and the Dodgers winning the pennant, what was our favorite moment or moments of the series?
Javi Baez's finger wag at Puig in game three was pretty great. It's
yeah.
Just two fun guys having fun out there, and it was great to see.
Yeah, it was a very lighthearted moment, and I saw some Dodger fans getting salty about it, but I was like, no, clearly Yasiel Puig thought this was fun, and he was laughing. And if he's not upset, then why should you be? It was just a very lighthearted moment, and it was what the game should be about, in my opinion.
Definitely.
I also enjoyed Darvish's fist pump and his uber-dramatic bases-loaded walk. That was great. I'll never not enjoy pitchers batting for themselves.
Yeah, he made Dave Roberts look like a genius.
Yeah.
Like, why are you leaving him in? It's like, oh, okay, sure. Either a genius or, like, a wizard, because, like, how do you, like, actually expect that to happen?
Yeah, exactly. And I think Lackey blowing the game was also a really good moment.
Yeah, just in general, Dave Roberts outmanaging Joe Maddon was really satisfying, because you know, Madden gets so much praise for, you know, being this like tactical brilliance mind and, you know, doing unconventional things. But, you know, we saw in this series, like, he really made some sort of confounding mistakes. And, you know, it's, I don't know. I was lucky enough to get to cover this series at Dodger Stadium. And every time Madden made a comment, I was like, why, what are you talking about? Like, you know, there was him comparing the soda tax in Chicago to the plate blocking rule, which got Twitter up in a tizzy because that's a ridiculous comparison to make. There was, I don't know, he said some other stuff. Oh yeah, he like tried to defend, oh, the Wade Davis thing, that was it. He was trying to defend the choice to go with Lackey instead of Wade Davis in the situation where Turner hit the walk-off home run, because he was like, yeah, we were saving our closer for a save situation, you know, despite the fact that the save situation might never come, so why aren't you using him in the spot where you can, you know, maybe get your team to extra innings and have a shot at scoring again? It didn't make any sense at all.
Yeah, I just love any time that Madden kind of gets exposed for, like, the crotchety old man that he actually is, as opposed to this, like, hipster, like, tactical genius who's just out here having fun and, like, shooting off, like, finger guns at people and just totally outmanaging everybody else. So, I mean, it was a great series for me. I loved it.
Yeah, I realized that in all that, I didn't actually pick a moment. I just wanted a chance to rag on Joe Madden.
Who doesn't?
Yeah, it's interesting how much of a heel turn he's taken. And I don't know if it's just since getting to Chicago or what, but anyway. Yeah, so moment, I guess, it would have to be Kike Hernandez's big game. You know, and the fact that it brought attention to his Puerto Rico hurricane relief fundraiser that he has going on. I think like from the start of that game to the end of that game, the total went from like 70,000 to like 112,000. So it was like 30 to 40K raised over the course of that game. And, you know, obviously while people should be giving for the sake of giving, like, this brought attention to the fact that he had this campaign. And so in addition to it being a big night for him and a big night for his family, you know, his dad who had cancer last year was there and able to see his son, and his family back in Puerto Rico was able to like watch on a TV being run on a generator. So in addition to like all that and all it meant for him personally, there was the fact that it led to this big push financially to give to this really important cause. So I think all that taken together made that really one of the most special things that came out of the series.
Definitely. I was, you know, torn between Kike Hernandez's home runs and Justin Turner's grand slam, because they're both just fantastic moments. I think more what I loved the most was the reactions from everyone in the dugout and how happy they were. And it's the kind of fun that we don't necessarily see in baseball every day. And I just keep thinking like, oh, you know, that's what people rag on Puig about. But it's, you know, it was just a joy to see ball players happy with the game that they're playing. So I would say just the entire dugout reactions whenever they scored the Dodgers scored something are my favorite moments.
Yeah, I think this is like, you know, everyone will say, oh yeah, it's a team effort, blah, blah, we're a team, everything is done together. But I think you really saw that in the case of this series with the Dodgers. And I think this was exemplified by after that game two, Kenley Jansen and Justin Turner came out into the interview room, and Kenley was wearing a hashtag vote JT shirt from Justin Turner's All-Star Final Vote campaign. And Justin Turner was wearing a Puig 66 shirt that he got from Puig's locker. And to me, that just kind of says everything. It's like, they don't want to make it about themselves. They want to focus on their teammates and what their teammates did. And that just, yeah, that really is cool to me to see like a team that is really sort of like, you know, as I said, every team will say, you know, teamwork and all that, but like, I feel like they have made it so demonstrably clear that, yeah, this is a very concerted, like, team effort that we have going on here.
Definitely. So, moving on to the American League. The Astros and the Yankees faced off in the ALCS, and it took a full 7 games, but the Astros emerged as the American League champions, making this just the 2nd time they've reached the World Series. What were the main highlights of this series?
Everything Jose Altuve did. Just all of it. He's fantastic in every respect that you would like him to be fantastic. And it was just really great watching him showcase himself throughout the entirety of a 7-game series.
Something that really struck me was just how pivotal home field advantage ended up being. This was the 2nd championship series in which neither team lost a game at home, which is the first time that's happened since 2004, I think. So it was amazing to see just like how even the crowds in Yankee Stadium and Minute Maid Park just pumped up the team. Whoever had the advantage at home. I don't know. It's always interesting to me to see how electric the ballparks become during the playoffs.
Yeah, and especially you kind of saw the games at Yankee Stadium had higher scores than the games at Minute Maid. So that's just kind of another interesting park factor.
Also, Justin Verlander. I feel like he needs his own little pedestal here. His complete game in Game 2, his performance in Game 6 that brought the Astros back to win it in Game 7, just he was phenomenal from start to finish.
Yeah, agreed completely. He has been, you know, he's another one of those pitchers, you know, we talked about Kershaw in the prior segment, but he's another pitcher who's been plagued somewhat by his playoff past, and he seems to have just completely put that behind him, certainly so far, and to see him, you know, performing on the stage like this and being a pivotal part of his team advancing to the next round is, again, it's got to be so vindicating for him. He was just kind of incredible to watch the series. I think we also have to give a shout out to Charlie Morton for that performance in the final game of the series. And also McCullers. Closing out that final game, throwing like 24 straight curveballs. I mean, that is, like, what? Like, that's crazy, but it was really kind of amazing to watch.
Yeah, and I guess kind of on the Yankee side, I'll be nice to them for a moment, and I'll throw it out to CeCe Sabathia, because he had a really great series, and I think it's just so fantastic that he's found so much success after battling alcoholism for so long.
Yeah. Very much agreed.
Yeah, and one of the highlights for me also was just the entire lineup for the Astros just managed to make Yankees pitching work. And, you know, you have CeCe Sabathia on the Yankees throwing gems out there. And, you know, the Astros lineup was incredibly resilient. You know, they were able to make it work, and, you know, then you've got Altuve just being Altuve. Carlos Correa was also, you know, getting hits at the right time. Evan Gattis, you know, just a lot of guys in their lineup making the Yankees pitchers work, and that was, you know, testament to how that lineup was built. So that was just incredible to watch, and now that we've talked about the highlights of the series, which players in this series disappointed?
The entire Astros bullpen. They just completely fell apart. This is what makes me worried about the World Series, because they were so drastically different from what we saw out of the Dodgers bullpen. You know, I think they were really lucky to have Verlander and Morton and Keuchel kind of like propel them with these long starts, because when it came time for the relief pitchers to come in, things did not go according to plan.
Yeah, and they also didn't get a whole lot out of Reddick or Springer either. Reddick only had one hit and Springer had three. So you'd really kind of like to see those guys get going a bit in case any of the top of the order falter a little bit.
Yeah, Reddick is who I was going to point to as a disappointment, you know, in part because of his performance, but also his post-game comments about how he wants to beat the Dodgers because, I don't know, some fans booed him when he was there in L.A. for a couple months last season, even though, you know, he was not very good and kind of deserved it. And it's like, the thing is, I like Josh Reddick. I like wanted him to do well as a Dodger, but he didn't. And I don't really blame anyone for reacting negatively to that. And I'm also like, okay, you're so like intent on like coming back and crushing the Dodgers when you just went like 1-for-24 or whatever it was. So yeah, Josh Reddick disappointed both his team and me. So that's my answer to this question.
He's got a lot of rebound from.
David Robertson in game 6 and 7 was, well, game 7, at least he was able to go 2 innings, but game 6, giving up the 4 runs without recording an out was incredibly disappointing, especially in a game where they could have won it all and gone to the World Series. That was a poorly timed implosion for the Yankees. And, you know, with someone like Robertson, who has been mostly in control of his bullpen outings, just completely melting down there was the worst possible thing for the Yankees.
And I guess just the total lack of trust in Betances as well. That's not great for them, and it certainly didn't serve them well in the series.
I feel like we also have to mention Aaron Judge breaking the postseason strike record.
Yeah.
He did have his like big moments and hits when they were back in New York, but then last night with McCullers, I mean, no one could fool McCullers, but I think that was just cherry on top.
Yeah, I mean, to Judge's credit, he had the highest OPS in that series of anyone on his team, so like, I don't want to rag on him too hard, but yeah, the strikeout thing is going to be a problem, I think, going forward for him. I mean, obviously, that's something people have been saying about him for a long time, and he, you know, outperformed people's expectations considerably this year in spite of that. But I think we saw, you know, what good pitching can really do to him on full display during these past couple of series for him.
Definitely. And I think, you know, with Judge being a rookie, he still has many postseasons ahead of him. Sorry, Mary. At least he's got a bright future ahead of him. But yeah, otherwise the Yankees lineup as a whole was just incredibly disappointing. Much to Mary's happiness.
I mean, you know, it wasn't the worst thing I've ever seen.
So finally, what was our favorite moment of the series?
Mine was when Aaron Judge tried to steal second base in game 4. I know that's like not conventional. There were a lot of really big, more impressive moments, but like just watching him try to take advantage of the Astros' appeal and sprinting towards second, knowing that he probably wasn't going to make it, was great. I love seeing like these unconventional things happen in postseason games.
Yeah, my favorite was the ball getting stuck in the wall, because that's just such a baseball thing to happen, and it was just great, because Springer had no idea what to do about it, and you don't really see those incidents in any other game, and they're just really unique and quirky, and I love them, and I think they make baseball what it is.
He tried to throw his hat at it.
He did. Yeah. He also thought about climbing the wall, which I would have loved to see.
guess my favorite moment would again be something I alluded to earlier, which is those 24 straight curveballs to close out the game, because I mean, I've just never seen anything like that before. Like, Rich Hill, eat your heart out.
My favorite moment would probably have to be from Game 7, where Springer and Gonzalez couldn't hear each other over the crowd. And while it was scary at the moment, because I still have flashbacks of David Dahl's outfield collision, where he ruptured his spleen, now that we know, you know, both Springer and Gonzalez are okay, that leap to, you know, to rob extra bases was one of my favorite moments, just because it's like, this is such a bizarre baseball moment. Why is it happening? Why can't they call off one another? But just one of those things in the moment where you're like, okay, that happened.
Yeah, and I guess in terms of other catches, Aaron Judge's, where he crashed into the wall, was pretty great for the crowd reaction shots that we got, as well. It was a great catch, and it's always just hilarious to kind of see Aaron Judge standing beside this, because, like, it's a wall, but he's just so much bigger than it, and I love that.
Yeah, plus all the Judge Altuve moments. Just anytime those two get together, it's like, it's amazing that you two are both as successful as you are in the same sport. Like, it's just, I think, a testament to, like, how many different types of people are able to succeed in baseball.
So, now that we've come to the World Series, it's going to be the Dodgers versus the Astros. How do we think it's going to go?
I want it to go 7 games. Sorry, Sarah. Because I
it's
think
okay.
I'll say the Dodgers in 7.
I am also going to go with Dodgers in 7. I just think that with the Astros' bullpen woes, that might come back to haunt them in the end. But, you know, it's two strong and fun teams going up against each other, and I just want the most baseball out of them.
Yeah, I'm going to say Dodgers in 5, just because they've been so much stronger on the road in the playoffs. I think they had 3 out of 4 games on the road they won, and the Astros have gone 1-4 outside of Houston. So, yeah, I'm going to tilt it in their favor.
All right. I am going to go Dodgers in 6, I think. Like, I can totally see this going 7 games, but also I can see them picking up a win on the road as well. So I am totally fine with it coming back to Dodger Stadium, by the way, because I'm going to be credentialed for the series, and I would love to be part of that champagne celebration. So that's a little bit selfish. I mean, obviously, if they want to go ahead and wrap it up sooner, and that's also presumptive. I mean, I shouldn't assume anything, but I should say that I am cool with the idea of it coming back to Dodger Stadium, because I think that these are two teams that are going to battle each other hard, going to make for some great baseball. And while I do think the Dodgers ultimately have the edge, especially, you know, if it gets into the bullpens, as we've talked about, it's not going to be easy. Not that any of these, I mean, these series have seemed easy for them, but, like, this, you know, obviously you're playing, like, top caliber teams. It's not easy per se, but this is, like, a team that will definitely present them with the biggest challenge thus far. And I think it should be a lot of fun.
With the season being over for most teams, we've started to see some managerial firings and hirings. First, who's out? Brad Ausmus is out for the Tigers. Terry Collins is out for the Mets. John Farrell is out for the Red Sox. And Dusty Baker is out for the Nationals. And as far as who's in, Alex Cora is going to be the new manager of the Red Sox. Ron Gardenhier will be managing the Tigers. And Mickey Callaway will be managing the Mets. The national spot has yet to be filled. So what do we think of the decisions to let these guys go, and what do we think of their replacements?
I am thrilled. I think that people did like to pile on Farrell a lot, but also you kind of saw in the playoffs how he's just terrible at managing the bullpen. And I think that if like he's mediocre at best, then it was obviously the right decision to let him go. And I think that Cora is a great hire. I cannot be happier to have him back. He's very dear to me because he mentored Pedroia a lot in those first two seasons that Pedroia was in the majors. And he's just got a great baseball mind, and I think he'll also be a really good clubhouse presence.
I understand why Dusty Baker was let go, particularly with his in-game tactics regarding the bullpen, and he knows that, you know, that wasn't a strong suit of his, you know. But at the same time, the Nationals have just been going through managers, you know, to steal a phrase from an earlier episode when Isabel Manassian was on here, you know, they're going through managers like toilet paper. You know, they've gone to the postseason, what was it, four times since 2012, and they've had a different manager each time. And I don't think that helps to build clubhouse cohesion if they're going through so many managers. And by all accounts with Dusty Baker, because of, you know, the history that he has managing, you know, there's people who would be like, you know, Dusty succeeded in spite of this, or Dusty failed because of this. There's just so much surrounding Dusty Baker, but I don't think it was necessarily the best idea to let him go. I don't think that it's going to contribute to whether or not the Nationals will have success. I think they probably would have succeeded even more next year had they stayed with the same manager, especially someone who has managed, you know, for such a long time like Baker has.
Yeah, and I think it's pretty telling that right now, with how late the Nats kind of got into the market, that Baker is the best manager for hire. So I think it's going to be really, really difficult for them to upgrade in this case.
I've seen some people toss out names that are maybe not super expected candidates, as in people who don't have, you know, experience managing a team. And a name that I have seen a few people suggest is Bob Guerin, who's currently bench coach for the Dodgers. And I think that would be a really good hire. You know, as much as I don't want to see the Dodgers let him go, he obviously has the smarts for it, and he knows the rules like as well as anybody else. So, you know, there's definitely like candidates out there who, you know, maybe not be as big of names, but I will agree that I don't know that it was a good decision to let him go, because by all accounts, it does seem like he was absolutely beloved in that clubhouse, and it seems like he did a really good job to sort of right that ship, because the Nats clubhouse was sort of tumultuous before he got there. And, you know, that counts. I don't know if it counts as much as in-game management, but it counts for a lot. And I also think that the Nats did not lose the NLDS because of Baker's management. I think it was more because players didn't execute the way that they should have. So, yeah, I don't know that this is a great decision on the Nats' part, but I also think that it is possible they'll find an upgrade, but, you know, we'll see.
Do you have any thoughts on the Tigers or the Mets?
Mets. That's all I can say.
Yeah, I think that, I mean, Terry Collins, like, certainly isn't a great manager, but the Mets have a lot more deeply rooted issues than just the managerial position. So, I don't know. I mean, good luck to Mickey Callaway. I think he's in a tough spot. As anybody would be managing the Mets right now. But we'll see how that plays out.
Yeah, and as far as the Tigers go, I mean, Brad Ausmus wasn't doing a good job as manager, and Gardenhire does have the experience that Ausmus doesn't have. So at the very least, you know, with Gardenhire, they will at least start to rebuild, be able to be a little more cohesive through the rebuild, especially with so many new faces coming in and out. Yeah, I think it was the right move for the Tigers to do that.
I wonder how the Tigers are feeling about it.
Yeah, that's an interesting question. I mean, with any team that lets a manager go, you know, they obviously had reasons for it. And now all of a sudden, here he is back, you know, in their division. So that's got to be a little weird. I will say, as much as I know Brad Ausmus needed to go, I am still a little sad to see him go. Just because I like Brad, I have a soft spot for him. You know, haven't been a ton of Jewish managers in baseball history, and so it's like, aw, that's too bad. But that's obviously not a reason why he should have been kept, but just a personal thing for me.
So, moving on to our Twitter questions this week. The first one is from @thatsadamnpuig. Why was someone wearing a Cubs hat in the Dodgers dugout in Game 3?
So thank you to this person for pointing this out to us and then also sending us screenshots of it, because we were none of us caught it, so we were all very confused when we first got the question. But there was a guy wearing a Cubs hat in the Dodgers dugout in Game 3. I think the consensus is that he was just an employee of the Cubs or of Wrigley, whatever. And so, you know, it was a weird sight, but I think that it has kind of a logical reasoning behind it.
Yeah, I mean, it could be security. It could be a camera operator. It could be a dugout attendant. There's many, many different options, and I know, you know, Wrigley and Cubs employees often wear Cubs hats on the job, so it's not at all unusual to have someone from the home team, you know, in the dugout wearing the home team's hat.
Mm-hmm. And I think in terms of, like, strange headgear during this series, the guy wearing a batting helmet and gloves in the stands, I think, is far more of a concern, or at least, you know, a puzzling thing that we saw during last night's game.
Yeah, I mean, I've seen people in the stands in, like, full uniform. I don't think I've ever seen anyone wearing a batting helmet before.
Yeah, I don't know. Did he, like, bring it into the stadium with him? Did he, like, get it, like, directly from the Astros? Like, what's going on?
Can you buy batting helmets? Like, all that I know of is usually you can get, like, kind of smaller versions that have food coming in them, like, you know, frozen yogurt or nachos. But that was, like, an actual helmet.
The Giants sell game-used batting helmets at AT&T Park, so maybe the Astros have something like that. Maybe it was a player's old batting helmet.
But it was
something.
Like, sorry.
So, yeah, maybe the Astros are selling batting helmets for charity. Who knows?
So I Googled this, and you can apparently buy them from some sporting goods store for $70.
Well, that sounds like money well spent to me. He made a statement.
He looks way too put together for that to be like a random, I came into the ballpark and bought this on a whim kind of thing.
Yeah, like he had a plan going in, I think. He was like, I'm going to wear my gloves. I'm going to hold them up to the camera. I've got my batting helmet on. Let's do this thing.
Now I kind of love the idea of him, like, buying nachos and then washing out the helmet and, like, wearing it.
Maybe he didn't even wash it out. Maybe there was, like, nacho cheese just, like, all up in his hair. We'll
that
never know.
That makes him a gamer. 80 grade grit.
In his hair from the nacho cheese.
So, the next question is from Ryan @rschulze20. On a scale of 1 to 10, how awesome is Yasiel Puig? And then he says in parenthetical, I know the answer is 15.
Yeah, I think that's a fair analysis, Ryan.
Yeah, I'd have to agree with that.
Yeah, he's awesome.
Yeah, for sure. Just in terms of his, you know, contributions number-wise, I mean, you know, this past series, like, he very easily could have been chosen as the series MVP. I mean, you know, the Turner and Taylor were both fantastic picks, and I'm not going to quibble with that at all. But Puig was right up there with them, you know, 7 hits. He had a home run, which, you know, first home run of his MLB postseason career, as people have noted. He said it wasn't the first of his, or it wasn't his first postseason home run, but he actually had hit some in Cuba. So, you know, that counts. We'll go with that. And also just all that he adds in terms of his energy and his enthusiasm. He's awesome. What can you say?
Yeah, I'm going to actually say he's a 20. He's a 10 for talent and a 10 for personality.
That is fair.
I think that, yeah.
So our next question comes from friend of the podcast, Mina Dunn at MadDC8. Very important question is this. Why don't the Nationals care about my feelings? Because the Nationals are mean and I will fight them for you, Mina.
We'll all fight them for you, Mina, because no one is allowed to hurt Mina. This is not okay with us.
Yeah, exactly. We got your back, Mina. Don't worry.
The next question is from Matt at TGMWB. Who will be World Series MVP and why will it be Yasiel Puig?
I like the enthusiasm, Matt. I like that, you know, we are assuming that this means the Dodgers win. But I mean, if they do win, I think Yasiel Puig is going to be a big part of why. And he, you know, hopefully will put up numbers similar to the ones that he has in the first couple of series and, you know, comes up with a few key hits, a few big defensive plays. I see no reason why he wouldn't be a candidate for at least a co-MVP.
Yeah, I would love to see him get MVP. I think it would be fantastic. I just love every single interview he's a part of. He's hilarious without meaning to be, although, I mean, obviously, he was sincere in the fact that he has hit, you know, previous postseason home runs. But, I mean, any time you can get more airtime for Puig is going to be a good move.
And did you guys see the quote from him post-game where it was, like, him and Chris Taylor, and someone asked, like, oh, why can you, like, talk about the differences in your approach? And, like, you know, Yasiel Puig has so much energy and Chris Taylor is so subdued. And Puig, like, without missing a beat, was like, he's gringo, I'm Cuban. And it made me love him even more because that's an amazing answer.
That is. That's fantastic.
So, yeah, I think it'll be Puig, you know, at the very least, co-MVP. He's a huge part of the Dodgers lineup, and not just the lineup, but the clubhouse presence. And he just embodies fun in baseball like Jose Altuve does. So, would not be surprised if the Dodgers, you know, end up winning. I wouldn't be surprised if Puig is at least co-MVP. Next one is from at KFS Roth. Tips for staying calm at game time.
There are none.
It's impossible.
I recommend pacing around and having a fidget spinner handy.
Yeah, maybe like go for a walk or like a jog or something right before the game.
Definitely get all the nervous energy out in a productive way.
Yeah. Don't tweet about it. Don't tweet through it. That's not going to work to your advantage.
That's not going to help anyone. Rule number one, never tweet.
Well, I will say, like, this is uncharted territory for a lot of Dodger fans and for Astros fans. You know, their team's never won a World Series. They've only made one appearance. So I think none of us know exactly what this is going to feel like. And I think you have to kind of embrace the nerves. You know, I know that that is much easier said than done, but most of us or many of us have never been here before. We haven't been here for quite some time. And it's exciting. It's, you know, we may, who knows next time that it will happen. So, you know, just embrace it to the extent that you can. And if not, maybe having something to drink. I don't want to like be out here recommending like, yeah, you know, medicate your problems with alcohol or whatever. Cause like, you know, that's not super healthy, but like a glass of wine or something, like that's fine. Like have a glass of wine.
Yeah. And I guess just look at the Audrey stats in the, NLCS and just say, you know, they've got this, they're a great team, and just go in with the mentality that whatever happens, happens. And know that if they don't win this year, they're going to be contenders for many years to come.
Or just sit with, you know, your favorite non-sports fan who can, like, reassure you through the game. Like, this doesn't matter that much. And then you can take out your, you know, your nerves and your energy out on them.
That's good advice. Or a dog. Watch the game with a dog and pet the dog. Or a cat. Whichever. It's not, you know. Just an animal that will be able to absorb your nervous energy.
Yeah, I also like making bread during a game because then you can just kind of knead out all of your frustrations. Mm-hmm. And then you get bread at the end, which is great.
Nice. I usually go for like baking cookies or brownies or something, but bread is a good idea.
Yeah, I just think it's more of an active process. But I mean, I won't quibble with cookies or brownies in place of bread.
So yeah. If anyone has any other ideas for tips to stay calm at game time, definitely tweet them at us for everyone else to relax. And our last question comes from Tom at TP Callahan Jr. What's the chance Maeda is a full-time reliever going forward?
I think this has got to be something the Dodgers are considering very strongly. The biggest deterrent to that is Maeda's contract. You know, it's so incentive-based, and so many of those incentives are based on innings pitched and things like that. So I think, you know, you got to rework the contract. I'm not a lawyer. I don't know exactly what has to happen for them to be able to do that, but it is something that's possible. So, yeah, rework the contract, figure out new incentives, and have him in there as just an absolute force out of the bullpen going forward. He would be such a valuable tool in that role for the Dodgers.
So, thank you for tuning in to this special episode of the Hardball Times Audio, and thanks to our special guest, Ashley Varela, for joining us. I can be found on Twitter at JenMacRamos. You can find Sarah at SarahWexler32. You can find Mary at Mary M. Craig. And you can find Ashley on Twitter at WCoastFangirl. You can find the podcast on Twitter at THTAudio. Thanks to our theme music from bensound.com. You can find all the episodes of the Hardball Times Audio on fangraphs.com/THT and iTunes. Please rate and subscribe. Be sure to tune in at the end of the World Series for the next episode.